Summarizes questions and answers. Question 25 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by the sages to Srila Sukha Goswami. Question 25. The sages, eager to hear about Krishna, declare that those expert in tasting rasa find no end to the relish of nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. They therefore request Sukha Goswami, please describe those topics of the Lord by which Maharaj Parikit, whose intelligence was fixed on liberation, attained the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of Garuda, the king of birds. Those topics were vibrated by the son of Vyas, Srila Sutta Goswami, 11:17. Sutta Goswami's answer to question 25. Sutta Goswami's answer to question 25 spans the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? That the sages intended by their question to hear the whole of the Bhagavatam from Sutta, as it was heard by King Parikit from Sukadev Goswami, is confirmed by this passage from the purport to verse 14. There is no end to such transcendental discourses. In mundane affairs, there is the law of satiation. But in transcendence, there is no such satiation. Sutta Goswami desired to continue the topics of Lord Krishna before the sages of Naimisharanya. And the sages also expressed a readiness to hear from him constantly. Since the Lord is transcendence, and his attributes are transcendental, such discourses increase the receptive mood of the purified audience. So there's a different, because in the material world you cannot become satisfied. Right? So that's a problem here, that's a weakness here. But in the spiritual world, one is satisfied but not satiated. Right? In other words, once satisfied, it's wonderful, and it's so wonderful you want more. Right? But it's not that you have to keep it up to maintain what's there. You're adding to what you already have. In the material world, you do something, then as soon as it's stopped, the effect drops off. So you have to do again to bring it up to that level. Again, it drops off. But in the spiritual world, it remains eternally. And then it's just increasing and increasing. So it gets more and more. So it's not a problem. Okay. Yes.
So the real advancement in devotional service means we add to what is already there, and then we feel better.
Yes. Because it means the devotional, whatever we're doing devotionally remains. It doesn't decrease. And so then it's just a matter of adding more and more. That's the thing. Unlimitedly that can be done. Because Krishna himself, he is transcendence, he is rasa, he is knowledge, he is everything. And so then, he doesn't have any problem in being that totality of that. So then we won't have a problem in increasing and developing that. Does that make sense? But even though he is the total sum substance of everything, he is rasa, still the experience of rasa is wonderful for him. So if it's wonderful for him, why wouldn't it be for the part?
Yes.
Right? We like eating. Our hand also appreciates. You know, like that. Yes.
So material rasa is the illusion that we are getting closer to what we think we want.
Yes. But the point is, with senses, as long as the sense and the sense object are connected, you get an effect. As soon as they're disconnected, the effect is lost, that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like you plug something into the current, it works. You unplug it, it stops that moment. It's not that it keeps going for a while.
What about the subtle body?
The mind then that basically will last, can have an effect, you know, for one's lifetime. But with the end of the lifetime, then that connection is gone. The underlying, let's say, interest in that area, but those experiences and the connections and the identities, that's all lost. Like that. So that's the difficulty. And speculation, you know, is fun as long as you don't come to a conclusion. Right? As long as you come to a conclusion, then it's a different satisfaction. Then you're talking about knowledge satisfaction, because then that's Krishna. Like that. Does that make sense? Because then, but the speculative element is. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 18th chapter, the king repents after placing a snake around the neck of the sage, and here's the curse of the sage's son. So, here is that the sages asked before, how is it that the Bhagavatam is being spoken? What led up to those events? So that's been described up to now. Now this is that last part, right? Then he will meet Sukadeva Goswami. Then they will start the Bhagavatam. So now they're asking, so what did they discuss? Right? So there's going to be an overlap here. That he's ending bringing out the details of why they're discussing. And then he's going to go into what they did discuss. Right? Does that make sense? And then within that there'll be questions. So we see some questions are very big, and some questions are about a specific detail. Right? So it's just, that's the natural way. Sutta Goswami begins by describing Maharaj Parikit's life, which contains wonderful dealings with Krishna. Sutta leaves no doubt that Parikit was powerful enough to conquer over and fully subdue Kali. Yet the king understood realistically that the coming of the age of Kaura was due, since Lord Krishna had departed the earth. He also understood that the self-controlled had nothing to fear from Kali's influence. Still, as king, it was his duty to protect the foolish and careless from that influence. The sages glorify Sutta and the importance of hearing about Krishna from great devotees. Right? So here's the difference here. Kshatriya is looking at it that the people are what do you see? Foolish and careless. So then he protects. You know, so it's like taking care of children. You protect, you take care. Right? It's not a matter of, oh, they're so foolish or they're stupid and why we should get involved and these kind of things. Or it's, you know, it's their problem. This is an actual, they care about it. Yeah, people are foolish. That's what means. General populace means that. That's what it means.
Right? What about somebody's foolish and careless, and then we take advantage of this and like?
That's the next step.
Next down.
Yes, means it's Kali Yuga. So advancement means down, not up. So when they say, you know, modern, we're progressive and all that, that means away from God and towards hell, like that. You know, just as you go that direction, basically speaking, the buckets get better and better. That's basically what's going on.
So they are progressing.
Yeah, before you had to go to hell in a wooden bucket or something like that, you know, handmade, got a hole in it, you got to stick some straw in the cracks. You know, now you can get nice stainless steel ones and stuff. I would think a wooden one would be more comfortable though. But The sages glorify Sutta and the importance of hearing about Krishna from great devotees. So this is always the point, is that's why Puranas are important, because then they're stories. And these stories are the narrations about these great personalities. Right? That's what's important. Devotional service means that. You don't have this kind of association, one won't do well. So when Prabhupada says if you don't read his books, then there'll be a problem. That's because you're not getting association, neither with him, neither with these great personalities. Right? They then request Sutta to describe the pastimes of the Lord, especially the topics upon which Maharaj Parikshit fixed his mind, and by such consciousness attained Krishna's lotus feet. Because he wanted to go back to Godhead. So therefore, of all the topics within the Puranic narration, he's going to focus on certain ones. So which ones did he focus on? That's the ones they want to know about. Because he did go back to Godhead, so it was successful. So why not follow in the same path? Right. Sutta first explains the process of purification through hearing about Krishna. He then relates Krishna's exalted qualities. Next, Sutta tells how Maharaj Parikshit insulted Shamika Rishi by placing a dead snake around the meditating sage's neck. After discovering this insult to his father, the Brahmin's son Sringi cursed Maharaj Parikshit to die in 7 days, even though his father dismissed the insult as minor. When he came to know the vengeful act of his offspring, Shamika Rishi lamented. Shamika Rishi prayed to the Supreme Lord to forgive Sringi for his foolishness. They're taking it here. Yeah, we'll see as we go. But it's the problem is, it's because of this dropping that the Brahminical standard is according to social position. Right? In other words, Brahmin, the main aspect is within the ashram, and then one goes over into Varna. So you have 5 aspects that are Brahminical. Right? But if one only sees it from the Varna aspect, then that's where the whole Brahminical community then falls down,
yes.
Right, from their position. Right? So that's the difficulty, because then it's all about the social, the position, and this and that. But the most important is ashram, because ashram is about where the shelter is, where the spiritual advancement is. Yes. So even though Sringi pointed out the faults in Varna for Maharaj Parikshit's act, what was missed was the ashram. That's what his father then pointed out. So that's a much greater loss. So it wasn't balanced. His curse wasn't balanced. You know?
This is what the smartas are doing?
Yeah, smartas, mayavad. It means everybody, yeah. Smartas do that. The caste Goswamis, you know, they're very famous for this. Because it is only by birth that, you know, that's... So... See, it's not that caste Goswamis can't be. See, the weakness that we put on caste Goswamis means two. One is that they're not technically Vaishnavas if they don't accept the eternal position of the Lord. Right? And there are those who do and those who don't. Then you have those who accept that position of the Lord, but they think they're Brahmas because of their birth. So those who don't have these two problems, then they're bona fide Vaishnavas. You know, they just happen to be born in Brahmin families. It means, you know, everybody has to be born somewhere. You've got to be born somewhere, right? You know, the smartas, then, they'll have these two problems, but generally worse. You know, but not necessarily. It's very individual. Generally, caste Goswamis tend to be, not necessarily, yeah, you can't say that either. But those who would classify themselves as smarta would generally be follow things nicely. So they would be Brahmins by their action. But the problem is that's where it ends. It doesn't go beyond. There's not necessarily realization. There's not these other things. And there's no Vaishnavism. Does that make sense? So it'll be rare. But it's not that there aren't those who then seeing this surrender to Krishna and then become best of the Brahmins.
But in their doctrine, the deity is a temporary form?
Yes, deity is just a form to meditate on, because it's hard to meditate on nothing. Right? Since you're using the mind, which is something, you have to meditate on something.
Yes.
But the problem is still, technically, that's not correct, because how can you, with something, meditate on something that's nothing?
Yes.
Right? You can't meditate on nothing, because there's nothing to meditate on.
Which makes it hard.
Yes, so that's the difficulty. There's nothing there. So the whole thing is kind of a made-up concept. Okay. Shloka Anusharanam. some of the verses. Verses 1 to 10, Suta Goswami glorifies Maharaj Purkit. Verses 11 to 17, the sages glorify Suta Goswami and the importance of hearing about Krishna. 18 to 23, Suta Goswami describes the power of Krishna Katha. Verses 24 to 37, Maharaj Purkit cursed by a Brahmin boy. Verses 38 to 50, the Brahmin regrets his son's deeds. Verses 1 to 10. Suta Goswami glorifies Maharaj Purkit. Suta Goswami explains that though Maharaj Purkit was powerful enough to conquer over Kali, the king understood that the age of Kaura was due since Lord Krishna had departed the earth. He also understood that devotees had nothing to fear from Kali's influence. Still, as king, it was his duty to protect the foolish and careless. Suta Goswami speaks thus to the sages assembled at Naimisharanya. Let us consider Sri Krishna's special mercy upon Maharaj Purkit. When he was a mere embryo in his mother's womb, he was struck by Ashwatthama's weapon. The Lord protected him even then. Much later, when Purkit was cursed by a furious young Brahmana to be bitten by a snake bird, the king was unmoved by fear. 1 to 2. Srila Prabhupada glorifies Maharaj Purkit in his purport to verse 2. A self-surrendered devotee of the Lord is called Narayana Parayana. Such a person is never afraid of any place or person, not even of death. For him, nothing is as important as the Supreme Lord, and thus he gives equal importance to heaven and hell. He knows well that both heaven and hell are creations of the Lord, and similarly, life and death are different conditions of existence created by the Lord. But in all conditions, because we always say, well, how is death existence? All it is means the existence of switching from one manifest existence to another. You're still existing, right? Existence doesn't stop. It's just... But in all conditions and in all circumstances, remembrance of Narayana is essential. The Narayana Parayana practices this constantly. Maharaj Purkit was such a pure devotee. He was wrongfully cursed by an inexperienced son of a Brahmin who was under the influence of Kali. And Maharaj Purkit took this to be sent by Narayana. He knew that Narayana, Lord Krishna, had saved him when he was burned in the womb of his mother. And if he were to be killed by a snake bite, it would also take place by the will of the Lord. In other words, you have an atomic weapon, you know, hey, blowing you up. And so Takshika is not anywhere near that kind of a danger. So if the Lord can protect him from that, why not from Takshika? So if he was to die by Takshika's bite, that was the Lord's arrangement, just like it was the Lord's arrangement that he wasn't killed by the Brahmastra. The devotee never goes against the will of the Lord. Anything said by God is a blessing for the devotee. Therefore, Maharaj Purkit was neither afraid of nor bewildered by such things. That is the sign of a pure devotee.
Right.
Yes.
It means that we should accept any situation and not try to make it better for devotional service.
Okay. Good point. Now, let us take Purkit Maharaj, since he's the example. And he's cursed to die by a snake bird. Okay? So, how to make such a situation better?
Two options.
Yes?
He can try to protect himself.
And how did that work out in Mahabharata?
Not
too
much.
Okay.
But he tried.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
The second one is this.
So, but of the two, which gives the better result?
This one.
Okay, so then is that not creating a better situation?
For him, it's very easy to understand, but for us, it's much more difficult.
It's just you have to apply the situation. This is the time of death. How to improve the situation of the time of death? Because you can't get rid of it. So how do you improve it? Yes, yes. That's the point.
But if we're not speaking about this, the time of death.
Yes. So then, how did he receive the age of Kali? You understand? In other words, if it's within your duties, you perform your duties. But what's the duty at the time of death?
Remember the world.
Yes. So all it is he's doing his duties. Right? Because the point is as a king, is how is it a king's duty to in counteracting the curse and doing all that? Understand? Because that's not, kings don't have that power. Kings don't have power over Brahmins like that. He, as a pure devotee, which means he's a superior form of Brahman, right? And then the Sringi being an immature form of a Brahman, right? So he was in a better position. But as a Kshatriya, then it's not his duty. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of one still. That's how you always know, is you go back to scripture. That's why it's so immature to doubt the scriptures. Yes. One can question. Yes. That's all. Means is we're here. We're on chapter 18, and we're on question 25. Yes. Right. So what does that mean? Questioning is fine, but questioning to know, to understand what the scriptures are talking about. But this kind of doubt, where we say we don't need to follow scripture, and then look for any loophole we can, you know, it's not exactly. It's just like tax evasion is not exactly what the government looks for in an ideal citizen, right? So in other words, God is not looking for those devotees who are doing their best to avoid all following of Shastric injunctions. That's not exactly what you would call getting the mercy. You know? Does that make sense? So it's a very simple thing. Is that so? How to know what you should be doing? That's what duties are mentioned. Otherwise, if we say scriptures can't define it because we're in the modern age. But what is the modern age? How is it? When Parikshit Maharaj's rule, was that modern or Vedic? Vedic. What's Kali's rule?
Not that Vedic.
Yeah, it means opposed to the Vedic element. It's very simple. It's so simple, it's freaky. It's just like people going, okay, well, what varna I am? Well, what do you do for an occupation? Well, I have a job. You answered your question. No, but you know, we're devotees, it's like, hey, give me a break, you know. We say Brahmin, yes, you know, Kshatriya, hell yeah, cool, you know, Vaishya, yeah, I got all the money. You know, Shudra, what? We're not this body. You know, it's like, you know, what is this? Is this like a social gala or something? You know, it's a matter of what the duties are. Then you know what to do. You know, that's like you have a book on, you know, how to organize and manage a kitchen. These old cookbooks used to have how to organize a kitchen. Modern ones, they don't even bother. Like this one, we translated. It's got like 100 pages on what you should have in your kitchen, what it does, and, you know, and all the different things and how to use it. Like that, 100 pages. And then I saw my mom had this cookbook from 1902. It was the White House cookbook. It was the official cookbook for the White House. And so it also gave all these things and what's in what season. And it was very elaborate. It wasn't just recipes. It was more how to run a kitchen, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So now, if we say, no, why do I have to use the grater like a grater? You know, why do I have to use the frying pan like that? You know, it's like that. It's weird. You know, it's just weird. So then, that's the whole point, is that if we appreciate that it's the duties, then it's very easy. Then it's a matter, okay, what are the duties, rather than why I should be performing duties? Why should the Vedas be describing my duties? Why can't everybody else just do everything and then my life goes easier? I mean, we can go on and on and on, you know what I'm saying, with these kind of arguments. But the problem is there's no solution like that. The Prabhupada has that whole run of things. You remember that? Something, no revolution, no solution.
No solution. It's in the longest term.
Yeah. But he goes through this modern, how it always goes through all these things, and then and at the end there's nothing. You know. So, just as a point of information. After they cut off everybody's head, Did they have more bread?
Not exactly.
Not exactly. So it wasn't. But at least one thing was there. There was less malice the fee. Yes. So then whatever was there went around easier. Okay. I mean, it's one way of going about a solution.
Practical.
You know. Yeah.
Less bread, more cake.
Huh?
Less bread, more cake.
More cake. Okay. Okay. Yeah, so I take it they didn't kill the bakers. Okay.
I never do that.
No, never. It just doesn't happen. Bakers are sacrosanct.
Protected.
Right? Yeah, protected. Right? Yeah.
The sixth group of.
Yeah, you line them all up and you cook croissants. Okay. This, and you get no. Okay. Therefore, Maharaj Pariksit was neither afraid nor bewildered by such things. That is the sign of a pure devotee of the Lord. Similarly, in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.14.5, 6.17.28, it is stated. Oh, you don't have one. And say, aren't we supposed to put the parentheses and the colon the other way around?
Parenthesis first and then colon. Or
no, generally colon. It's colon, yeah, colon and parenthesis, right?
I wouldn't. Yep, I wouldn't.
Huh?
Yeah. Someone says.
After the brackets, it doesn't.
No, you didn't catch the point. Yeah, so if you put it the other way around, you can smile. No? Like this is grammatically it's okay.
Yeah, you don't
get a smiley face.
It's not a happy smiley face. It's a sour face.
Yes. Okay. Devotees solely engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. Never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Right? Wherever Krishna is, it's nice. Wherever Krishna is not nice, I mean, Krishna's not present, it's not nice. O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. So the idea is that if you have facility for doing service, then that's great. That's the point. Improving facilities means improving the facilities for service.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes. That's the idea. Yes. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you're trying to cook for, you know, a whole temple full of devotees and you have a kitchenette. Doesn't work so good. You know, you turn one of the, you know, rooms into the kitchen, then that's better. So it's not improving because a bigger kitchen is better. It's because a bigger kitchen's better because it's nicer for cooking for the devotees. You understand? So like that you improve. Yes.
Can the devotees have some of those qualities of Narayana? Yeah.
Why specifically Narayana?
Well, because you mentioned that he was fearless and only centered on Krishna.
No, that's, you mean Narayana Parayana? Is that what you mean?
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's about Narayana Parayana means one who is, you know, fully surrendered to the Lord.
Oh, that's a quality of a devotee.
Yes, because Narayana is the Lord. Parayana, I think it means, you know, that the one surrendered, one's life.
Okay,
and everything.
Good.
Okay. Yeah, that's the point. Okay. Suta Goswami continued. This was because, was that an aborted question? No? It was that. Okay. This was because he was always surrendered, consciously surrendered to the personality of Godhead. Accepting the curse is the will of the Lord. Mars Pariket renounced his near and dear ones and surrendered himself as a disciple of the son of Vyas, Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Thus, right, because if it wasn't Kali Yuga, then, and Kali wasn't supposed to be coming, then he could do something about it.
Yes.
But it's Kali's age now. And so this is just because the Lord could make some other arrangement. Because Prabhupada mentions that these great devotees, they have all the mystic cities, so there's no problem. But they don't generally use them because they want to see how Krishna wants it to roll, right? How he wants it to unfold. So that way, then, generally the mystic powers are not used. Though they have them, but they just don't use them. Right? Does that make sense? So, I guess. Now there's a question? Getting closer? No? Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, from this narration, it appears that pure devotional service is not dependent on the facilities as such.
No.
Because then Maharaj Pariket, he was a king, he was devotee. Then he left the kingdom, still he remained a devotee.
Yes.
But then for us, it's not the same.
That's because we are identifying with it. So then we say, if I have this situation, I'll be comfortable, so then I'll be able to be Krishna conscious. So, because it basically, it works within our mind, it's not a problem if we go about it in connection to the Lord. But it's factually being Krishna conscious is not dependent on the environment. Because the soul is not dependent upon the environment for Krishna consciousness. Because the soul doesn't require the body to be Krishna conscious. So it doesn't require the body, it doesn't require what's connected to the body. But because we identify with the body, therefore certain situations are comfortable for us and certain not. So then, generally speaking, one adjusts things to make it where it's not uncomfortable. Then one can focus on the Lord. And then as one, having focused on the Lord, then one starts to develop until the situation doesn't matter. Right? And then that's called vanaprastha. Right? It's just natural, is that you don't require that situation, so then whatever, but you carry on in the same method that whatever's useful, you use, and whatever's not, that you drop. So, therefore, what every individual requires, that's different. Somebody requires a big place, somebody requires a small place. You know, somebody requires lots of, somebody not, somebody lots of clothes, somebody not. Somebody, you know, a position, somebody not. So that's the whole thing. It doesn't matter. Because here is the extreme. You know, you have Maharaj Pariket at one end of the scale and Sudama Brahman at the other. And they're both fine. And then you see, Pariket, like your the example you gave, he's starting with the empire and ends up with nothing. Right, and then Sudama Brahman starts with nothing, ends up with everything. But in either case, they're both, they don't change as devotees. So that's the glory. It's not about the situation, but it's approved that if you feel by improving the material situation, it will improve your chances at being Krishna conscious. Do it, because the point of doing it is to please Krishna. Does that make sense? So in the inverse, just like what you have. Is not particularly defined. The point is what the Shastras say, don't have more than you require. So if what you have, you use. You're engaging it. Who cares if you have the whole world? Right? But if you're not, then you keep less. Same way, going the other way, into vanaprastha, what facilities you keep or not keep, that's still going to be just as individual. So that's why there's not so much defined there. Brahmacharis, they don't require much. Sannyasis don't require much. Therefore, it's kept in those minimal areas. But for the grihastha, you're dealing with what are the material identifications. So, depending upon the individual, it's different. So, therefore, you deal with whatever it is. Does that make sense? So, it's not a problem as long as it's connected to the Lord. If it's connected, it gets purified. If you don't connect it, then that's a waste of time. That's what the Bhagavatam's talking about. That's the Shrama Avi Kapil. So if someone is just developing and doing this and that and doing all these things, but not seeing it in relation to Krishna, it's a waste because it'll all be taken away. It's just a matter of time. But if you're using it in connection with Krishna, whether it stays or not, it doesn't matter. You get that spiritual benefit. You get that understanding. You get that realization. So that's why it's recommended. And there's no specific combination. It's always recommended is towards nivritti, because nivritti means the path of renunciation, so the results are for Krishna. But it doesn't mean you're not using the processes that would typically be called pravritti.
Yes.
So this is the difficulty, is that devotees will talk about the spiritual, but much of the time in general conversation or view, will drop into material. And so then they try to use an improved material. And so if they're from, cultured Indian background, then they'll fall back on the Vedas. And if they're not, they'll fall back on, modern, kind of more liberal socialistic kind of concepts. So that's all. So the point is if it's not connected to Krishna, then it basically is useless. Is that what?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. It's very individual. That's the point. Is it talking, but this is so archaic. It says you don't have a system that's so individual. You just don't have. I mean, you look in these old paintings, and you see how people are dressed in that. Now, they're all dressed within the Vedic kind of like circle. Some guys have shaved heads, some guys have long hair, some guys are wearing, dhotis that deities wear, some guys are wearing basically, rags or, things. And they're all together and they're all working together quite fine. Nobody's worried about it. But nowadays you're a little different, immediately people are making points and comments and this and that. Yes.
At the same time, they talk about uniqueness.
Yes. Yes. So it's a real interesting, not well designed kitchery, and nobody's getting any taste from it, right? You wear something right up to date, then they complain, "Oh, you're copying me." And if it's and if they're just not into it, "Oh, that's so yesterday." So what are you supposed to wear? So it's just like, it's ridiculous. There is something. It keeps it from, see if it goes back, it falls forward. Yes.
So Maharaj Parikshit, it was what edge he had at the end of his life?
That I'm not sure. I haven't come across it. I don't know. Have you seen it? I don't know. He wouldn't have been so young, but he wouldn't have been so old either.
I think
he was in his 30s.
Okay.
He's in his 30s. So. Middle age, not bad. Used all this youthful energy for maintaining his kingdom. And then once you're over the hills, time to go.
Yes.
I also think Shankaracharya went when he was 33.
Yes.
Same age as Jesus.
Jesus. Popular age. Okay, so that, in your early 30s, that seems to be the age. You're over the hill, what's left? Thus he became fully cognizant of the transcendental position of the Supreme Lord. Parikshit fully dedicated his life to the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead. Never once did he forget the lotus feet of the Lord. Those who always remember those lotus feet never run the risk of being overwhelmed by misconceptions, even during the last moments of their lives. Right? So one's overwhelmed by misconceptions if one is not thinking of the Lord. Because the point is where does misconception come up? Because you don't want to understand the scripture according to what the scripture is saying. Right? Because what it's saying is how to get to Krishna. But we have another idea of what we want to do, so that's where the misconception comes up. If we see it in connection to Krishna, then it's, why does it say here? Like
this.
right? Not that, oh, this says this, that says that, so the contradictory, so I don't have to follow either of them. Right? No, this says this, that says that, so how do I work that out, that they're actually understand how they're saying the same thing? Because if it's Krishna, Krishna is the origin of all things. So all inconceivable, irreconcilable things are reconciled in him. Because he's the origin. So then everything can be worked out. That's why Narad Muni is known for the quality to be able to reconcile all the seeming differences in scripture. Because there are no differences. They just seem to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But, yeah. It's just like, is there a total opposition between, let's say, trigonometry and algebra? Right? Does that make sense? No. The point is they're all just different aspects of the same thing. As long as this great, powerful son of Abhimanyu remained emperor of the world, there was no chance the personality of Kali would flourish. Footnote 15. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that after being punished by Kali, by Parikit, Kali, though he had entered everywhere, could not influence anyone. Mm-hmm. Right? He's sitting there, but no one can be influenced. Now the point is this, so that means they're not breaking any of the religious principles.
Yes.
Right? And it means that they have wealth, right? They're prosperous. But they're not hoarding.
Yes.
So they have a huge, immense wealth, but they're not hoarding, so therefore Kali can't bother them. Srila Prabhupada explains the reason for that. As we have already explained, the personality of Kali had entered the jurisdiction of this earth long ago, and he was looking for an opportunity to spread his influence all over the world, but he could not do so satisfactorily due to the presence of Maharaj Parikit. At least one has to admire Kali Raj for thinking big. Right? He's got nothing and he wants to spread the whole world. Right? That is the way of good government. The disturbing elements, like the personality of Kali, will always try to extend their nefarious activities, but it is the duty of the able state to check them by all means. Although Maharaj Parikit allotted places for the personality of Kali, at the same time, he gave no chance for the citizens to be swayed by the personality of Kali. Srimad Bhagavatam 118.5 purport. Right? Because training is there. Protection is there. So all these things. Kali promoted all kinds of irreligious activities. And the very day and moment Sri Krishna departed the earth, this purveyor of sinfulness tried to assert his ungodly influence throughout the world. Yet Maharaj Parikit had no personal enmity towards Kali. Indeed, he knew well that in this age, auspiciousness produces immediate good effects, while inauspicious acts must be physically undertaken before their bad reactions can manifest. Srila Prabhupada explains. The age of Kali is called the fallen age. In this fallen age, because the living entities are in an awkward position, the Supreme Lord has given some special facilities to them. So by the will of the Lord, a living being does not become a victim of a sinful act until the act is actually performed. In other ages, simply by thinking of performing a sinful act, one used to become a victim of the act. On the contrary, a living being in this age is awarded with the results of pious acts simply by thinking of them. Just think how much charity you could get.
Yeah.
Maharaj Parikit, being the most learned and experienced king by the grace of the Lord, was not unnecessarily envious of the personality of Kali, because he did not intend to give him any chance to perform any sinful act. He protected his subjects from falling prey to the sinful acts of the age of Kali, and at the same time he gave full facility to the age of Kali by allotting him some particular places. At the end of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that even though all nefarious activities of the personality of Kali are present, there is a great advantage in the age of Kali. One can attain salvation simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Footnote 16. My dear King, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.351. So, that's the benefit. In this age, you think about doing things. So even you think about doing devotional service and you want to do and make plans to do, but even if it doesn't happen, you still get benefit. Right?
That's good.
Right? Does that make sense? Thus, Maharaj Parikshit made an organized effort to propagate the chanting of the Lord's holy name, and thus he saved the citizens from the clutches of all, all good for the age of Kali.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but which is the typo? Oh well. In any case, we know by the context of the whole thing that he saved his citizens from the effects of the age of Kali. In the Vedas, also said that by discourse on Lord Krishna's activities, one can get rid of all the disadvantages of the age of Kali. In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also said that by the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Supreme Lord becomes at once arrested. The Supreme Lord becomes at once arrested within one's heart. These are some of the great advantages of the age of Kali. And Maharaj Parikshit took all the advantages and did not think any ill of the age of Kali, true to his Vaishnavite cult. Yes?
How did Maharaj Parikshit organize the chanting of the holy name?
Did he go out himself? Did he send his officers? Did he get the police to do it? Was it done by the local Lions Club? Or what do you... Probably more Rotary, right? Yeah, Lion's kind of a little more stuffy, but you know, Rotary would probably be more active. No? Yeah, okay. Definitely one of the Moose Club, right?
Okay. The Fez Hats.
What do you mean?
I'm saying here it says that he found a way to.
Yes, so he's promoting, so all these different ones, right? Okay, propagate, citizens, discoursing on Krishna's activities, hearing Bhagavatam, these kind of things. So he would make sure that these kind of discussions were happening. They should be happening anyway, but he just encourages them.
He must have done it for the Brahmin class.
Yes, of course. Yes. That's why Prabhupada says, first you create a class of Brahmins.
Yes.
Right? That's the you know, in other words, as the Prabhupada talks about, if you had Brahmins to do it, then you'd get them to do it. But if not, then we're the stand-ins until they take it up. Right there. Okay. So he's not thinking ill of Kali because he's just doing what he does. So if you arrange it right, he can't do anything.
Yes.
So that's the whole thing. So it's not a problem.
Yes.
Those self-controlled persons have nothing to fear from Kali, Suta Goswami continued. Maharaj Parikshit felt responsible for his less intelligent subjects. As a worthy representative of the high-born Kshatriya nature, the king, though as powerful and ferocious as a tiger, was caring towards the careless and unintelligent. Footnote 17. Those who are not devotees of the Lord are careless and unintelligent. So then, this is the other way of putting. Unless one is thoroughly intelligent, one cannot be a devotee of the Lord. Those who are not devotees of the Lord fall prey to the actions of Kali. It will not be possible to bring about a saner condition in society unless we are prepared to accept the modes of action adopted by Maharaj Parikshit, i.e., propagation of the devotional service of the Lord to the common man. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.8 purport. So it's the same thing. In other words, this mission has always been there. It's not that it's a new thing. Right? So that's the whole point. It's just that the mission has its manifestations. So this is now how the founder establishes that manifestation of the mission. You know, so there always must be organized, but it's organized on the principles of the mission. Then it works nicer.
In other words, it's always there, but because he feels that the quality of the people is declining, so emphasis is on the
holy. Yes, Yes. The emphasis is means emphasis is always there in the devotional community, but there's a non-devotional community, right? So then for them, because they're careless and unintelligent, doesn't mean that they're not smart people or not, you know, focused on what they do. They're careless in the way of Kali, so they get bound up by him. Because many times you find your most professional, intelligent, successful people are addicted to all four, at least three of the, sinful activities. Like that. So that's the difficulty. What is it that means? Just some back and said that there was those three basic kind of like underlying causes. There was pride, unnecessary attachment to women. What was the third one?
Intoxication.
Okay. Yeah, so you could take that and basically that is a professional's lifestyle. No? Yeah. So then that gives rise, therefore they're so easily subject to Kali Yuga.
Look at your perspective, how, you know, there's so much decline today, and then we look back into even the remote culture, even within Kali Yuga, how much we appreciate those cultures, how people were so educated in the culture, and still we have culture of Kali Yuga.
Yes, so you can imagine what they were like previously, and those were the tribals, you know. Those are the tribals. Mm-hmm. And the wealth they had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, Europe thrived because they took the wealth of the rest of the world. You know? But otherwise, if they hadn't done, you know, I'm sure that they would have, you know, figured out something to do, you know, a brisk trade in bear skins or something. They would have worked something out, you know. Okay.
Spins.
Wheels always spin. That's time.
The Westerners are beggars, and the Asians are beggars.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of time before someone else takes over. You know, like the, you know, the penguins walk in. Right? You know, they're already dressed for it. You know. Yes.
So Maharaj, it seems that pure devotees like Maharaj Parikshit or Srila Prabhupada, they are always peaceful.
Yes.
And they know what to do in any type of situation.
Yes.
It seems that they have like a vision from the future.
But it's because if you know scripture and one has faith in that, know Krishna, then that can be seen. So that's the tree called Gya.
Yes.
You know, it's not, it means that mystical element may be there, but the point is the mystical element is Krishna.
Yes.
So he reveals, because you're working according to scripture. It's only going to work according, scripture is the manual. It's not somebody's opinion or an option or alternative.
Yes.
It's just the manual.
Yes.
You know, so that's why we say you have a machine, you have a manual for the machine.
Yes.
And then you're trying to say, oh, that's archaic. The point is if it's archaic, it came with the machine. So if the manual's archaic, means the machine's archaic.
Yes.
So if the Vedas are archaic, then the material world's archaic. So why would you be worried about it? You know, so eating, sleeping, mating, defending, how archaic is that? You know, that's so, you know, million year BC, you know, it's just, come on, get with it. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing, is that people miss the whole, they go together. That's what probably gives these examples. It's not that, oh, it doesn't apply. Yes, it doesn't apply for those who don't want it to apply, and that's exactly what Kali wants. He wants us to not apply it. Because if you follow the Vedic, like Parikshit Maharaj does, Kali has no influence. If you follow it without connecting to Krishna, he also has influence, because he'll get you by pride.
Yes.
That's the thing. Pride's the first thing. That's how this influence works. As soon as you're proud, he can work his magic. If you're not proud, then if we're servant of Krishna, then it works. But the pride is where he first starts. Because intoxication, how you say, over attachment to women, yeah, these are ones that one could, the general populace could see as not ideal.
Yes.
But pride is just something that everybody has. You know, if it's excessive more than what everybody else has. Just like for, you know, someone from one place, you know, like the Shastra says, the Malechas will be very proud of their language and stuff. So amongst the Malechas seem normal. But you put the Malecha in any other culture, and everybody else then agrees that they're overly proud. So it's just how it works. So it's just the basis. So therefore, they're so open to Kali. So that's the pride is his key. That's what he catches. Okay. Those self-controlled persons have. Oh, okay. Okay. O sages, as you did ask me, now I have described almost everything regarding the narrations about Lord Krishna in connection with the history of the pious Maharaj Parikshit. The topics I relate here today ensure complete success in life for those who simply submissively receive them. So even what instructions are up to now, if you follow them, you can perfect your life, let alone what he's going to now discuss over the next, you know, 11 cantos. Especially the 10th, verses 11 to 17. The sages glorify Sutta Goswami and the importance of hearing about Krishna. In this section, the sages glorify Sutta and the importance of hearing about Krishna from great devotees. They then request Sutta to describe the pastimes of the Lord, especially the topics upon which Maharaj Parikshit fixed his mind, and by such consciousness attain Krishna's lotus feet. The sages at Naimisharanya reply, O grave Sutta Goswami, because you speak very nicely about the activities of Lord Krishna, may you live for many years and have eternal fame. For mortal beings like us, your words are just like nectar. We have just begun the performance of this sacrifice without certainty of its results due to the many imperfections in our actions. Although our bodies have become black from the smoke, we find ourselves doubtlessly pleased by the nectar of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, that you distribute among us by your talks. So, in other words, the actions within the world you're not so sure about, but discussions about the Lord, remembrance of the Lord, that then gives very good results. In Bhakti Sandarbha Anucheda 99, Srila Jiva Goswami comments as follows on the statement of the sages in verse 12. The words asmin karmani mean in this sacrifice, and anasvase means without certainty of result. The result is uncertain because of the presence of many unknown factors. Because unless you do it perfectly, then the karmakanda yagya is not going to work. Right? So this, the karmakanda, they're doing a yagya with a desire for result, but the result is that everybody becomes uplifted. Right? The result is uncertain as, for example, it is in agriculture. However, it is said here that the result of performing devotional service is certain.
Yes.
Right. Do we do that yagya?
To uplift everyone?
No, we just do what we do is just pancharatrik, which recommend. It means in 11th canto we'll bump into that yagya. Like that. It's described there. But it's just part of the deity worship. So it's always beneficial.
Yes. I was thinking the Sankirtan Yagya flips everybody.
Yes, that's there. But that's the point here. However, said here the result of performing devotional service is certain. Right? Because this is the Vedic age, so you have different activities that you can perform. So in Dwapara Yuga, you know, basically you perform the activity and properly you can get the good result. But in Kali Yuga, because the faults are so great, at any point there might be some mistake, and then you won't get the results. So in previous ages, you could engage a lot of these technical Vedic things in the Lord's service. But in this age, then it's slimmed down because they're too technical and people can't get the results. It's just the way it is. There's something wrong. There's something. No one wants to do this or that. You know, it's just like it means. It's rare. Even like, let's say, the samskaras. Rare that you ever they come out exactly as it's recommended. Like that, because somebody doesn't want this, or somebody doesn't want that, or why do we have to do this, or it's too long, or, you know, it's just all these kind of stuff. Or, you know, it's just like I heard of a wedding the other day, that as the wedding was going on, and because the wedding is about, just as the Upanayana was about the purification of the boy, the wedding ceremony is about the purification of the girl. And there's a section, I think, Ajasamskar, or the next one, what is it called? I think Driti Homa. So in there, it's talking about purifying all the different aspects in the girl, the curls in her hair, her crying, her, you know, this, all the different parts of her body. So, you know, any imperfections. Because those imperfections come from the mind, and that mind comes from consciousness. So it's a much bigger thing. So then the priest, you know, did the thing and started reading the translation. And then somebody kind of, you know, raised their hand and said, hey, you know, I just wanted to make a comment here, but the girl's eyes are fine, you know, her hair is great, you know, she's beautiful, you know, so it's not that we need to do all these things, you know, it's just, what are you supposed to do in these things, you know, the illusion's so great, you know, like that, you know, what to do?
The bird rises again?
We won't get into that. But it was family, don't worry. But they, it means they continued after. But his point is that, you know, they have to make, so that's the thing, is it's not understood what's happening here. What you're purifying means, why do you have a material body? Is that because of perfection? That's because of imperfection.
Yes.
Like that, so you want to purify that so there's no birth again. That's the whole point. Grihastha life is to burn up all these things. Right? So if there's an imperfection, then it means that there'll be too much of a focus, too much of a worry, too much of an anxiety.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, so, you know, oh no, this is that. No, I'm so fat. You think I'm fat? No, no, you're not fat. Oh, you think I'm fat? You know, so, these are dealing with imperfections. So in other words, this is to remove all that so things go more smoothly.
A solid build.
Yes, yes. And don't, you know what I'm saying? No, in other words, it's the mentality. The fault's not so much the physical, the fault's the mentality. Because physical comes from mental. So you correct the mental, and the physical is corrected. Okay. The phrase "duma dumrat manam" means our bodies and minds have been dirtied by the smoke. The word here is in the genitive case. It means of us. That is the meaning. Devotional service, on the other hand, is completely dependable because you get so absorbed in the ritual. Like that. So then one becomes distracted by that. But here, then doing this for the Lord, they feel purified, they feel satisfied. Right. Here, padmasavam means the nectar of the lotus feet, and madhu means honey. The two activities being compared are, one, the fruit activity of the sacrifice, and two, devotional service, where there is hearing the glories of the Lord. The sages here say, these non-devotional fruitive activities have made us unhappy. In this way, the superiority of devotional service is established. This is also described in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.12.54. The great endeavor one undergoes in executing the ordinary social and religious duties of the Varnashram system, in performing austerities, and in hearing from the Vedas, culminates only in the achievement of mundane fame and opulence. But by respecting and attentively hearing the recitation of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Lord, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune, one can remember his lotus feet. So that point is whatever is being done, if it's not being done in connection with the Lord's lotus feet, it's of no use. Srimad Bhagavatam 122.12.12.13. 22 again explains. Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight, because such devotional service is enlivening to the self. So that was the point. They were performing fruitive activities. They weren't certain of the results. They weren't being enlivened. Right? But devotional service, they're sure of the result, and they're becoming enlivened. So that's the point. Right, so one can remember the lotus feet of the Lord, then he is enlivening, that's enlivening to the self. Okay. So in his purport to 1.18.12, Srila Prabhupada concludes, the sages of Naimisharanya were practically sufferers from the smoke of a sacrificial fire and were doubtful about the result. But by hearing from a realized person like Sutta Goswami, they were fully satisfied. In the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Vishnu tells Shiva that in the age of Kali, men full of anxieties of various kinds can vainly labor in fruitive activity and philosophical speculations. But when they are engaged in devotional activity and philosophical... Wait a minute. When they are engaged in devotional service, the result is sure and certain. There's no loss of energy. In other words, nothing performed for spiritual realization or for material benefit can be successful without the devotional service of the Lord. The sages proceed to voice an important verse. Tula yama lavin api na svargam na punar bhavam bhagavat sangi sangasya martyanam kim uta shisha. The value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot even be compared to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter. And what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which are for those who are meant for death. In his purport to verse 13, Srila Prabhupada summarizes the cause of the sage's misfortune at Naimisharanya. Because what is the other two? Why are they called? Why give it this way? Right, the heavenly planets are known as Amara, right, for deathless, right, and then attaining the Brahman, then that is Amara, or deathless. So then that means if it's not those two, it's about death, going to die. And so that the material benedictions here, of facility, that's meant for people who are going to die.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So you get facility, but then you die. Right, Brahman, no facility, you don't die. You kind of go together.
Yeah, tough choice.
If you don't get facilities, you also don't die.
No, here it just doesn't work out so good here.
You die anyway.
You die anyway. Yeah.
Might as well get facilities.
Yeah, you might as well get some facilities. Yes, like that one. I heard the story Prabhupada had told about some gentleman in Calcutta that he, somehow or another, I guess they were having some kind of feast, and he ate so many pakoras that somehow or another he died. Now, that's serious. And then just before dying, he mentioned to his son, well, at least no one can say I starved to death.
He's got that going for him.
So even though you're going to die, you went out with a bang. Yeah, okay. So. In his purport to verse 13, Srila Prabhupada summarizes the cause of the sage's good fortune at Naimisharanya. Devotional service is eternal. It has no end, because it is spiritual. Therefore, since the assets of a pure devotee are completely different from material assets, there is no comparison between the two. Right? One always ends like that. The other doesn't end. That's the difference. Right? Same endeavor. One you get an eternal result, one you get a temporary result. Sutta Goswami was a pure devotee of the Lord, and therefore his association with the rishis in Naimisharanya is unique. In the material world, association with gross materialists is veritably condemned. The materialist is called Yoshit Sangi, or one who is much attached to material entanglement, women and other paraphernalia. Such attachment is conditioned because it drives away the benedictions of life and prosperity. And just the opposite is Bhagavat Sanghi, or one who is always in the association with the Lord's name, form, qualities, etc. Such association is always desirable. It is worshipable. It is praiseworthy. And one may accept it as the highest goal of life. So the whole point is, whatever the situation, if it's absorbed in the Lord, it's worthwhile. If it's not, it's a waste of time, even though it may be very pious, very desirable, you know, they say. The epitome of the pinnacle of social status for those who are meant to die. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates on the same topic. We speak of the glories of the great ocean of association of such devotees as you, from what realization we have. We should not compare the results of karma, attainment of swarga, or the results of jnana, liberation, with a small particle of association of devotees, Bhagavat Sanghi. We will not even compare the blessings of this world, such as a kingdom, with that. That is because by association with devotees, the sprout of bhakti, which is most rare, appears. Let us not compare even the full results of karma and jnana with the particle of association of devotees doing sadhana bhakti. What then to speak of extended association, and what to speak of association with a devotee having bhava, the result of sadhana, and what to speak of association with a devotee having prema. Okay, so here he's saying is you can't even compare things like having a kingdom. Right? So when we discuss about Shastra, when it talks about having a kingdom, generally that means a kingdom means emperor of the whole world. That's a kingdom. Like Maharaj Parikit's kingdom. That's by the Veda, that will be counted as one unit of happiness when they start to try to compare the happiness within the various situations in the world. So they'll start from there. So therefore, even that is not anything. So these kind of things, and even if you get the full results of karma and jnana, right? Full results of karma, you could become Brahma. For full results of jnana, you could get liberation. You can't compare that to the association of sadhana bhakti. Right? So that means any devotee that we call a general devotee, their association will give so much greater results than liberation or becoming Lord Brahma. Right? Let alone then someone who is more advanced.
Yes.
Right? You know, then what to speak of that advanced, that association of general devotees on a regular basis, over a long period of time, that's even greater. Then greater than that is someone on bhava, greater than that is on prema. Yes?
Maharaj, sometimes devotees, after, you know, knowing a little bit of the scriptures, practicing bhakti yoga, when they deal with the world, they have this, you know, condescending views of the world, you know, the kalis, you know, so pure, and they are the ones who know everything, and they just fallen, and they don't know everything. You know, it doesn't make so much space for compassion and the desire to actually help people. And when I read this, even the association of someone who is doing sadhana bhakti, you feel like, wow, that's the truth. Look who I'm situated. You know, there is a danger there to develop some false pride.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the first thing Kali works on, is pride.
Yeah. So how do we balance it out and avoid this?
Because then from sadhakas, then there's bhava, and yes. Then from bhava there's prema. Yes. And devotional service starts at prema. That's why we're called sadhakas. Yes. Well, it's just not even that. It's just that when you come to prema, it's like, you know, how you say, first attain prema, then we can talk. Right? You know, that's you know, that's the position. That's devotional service. Everything before that is developing, is preparation. So we're in practice. So that we're practice that it's about Krishna and not about, you know, not Krishna. Then in bhava you can apply that very nicely. Right? Because you're on the transcendental platform, but now you'll apply transcendence to Krishna rather than for yourself. But this, when you get to prema, then that's now that's the natural position. So that's why these two elements are there. For yourself, is you look at it that prema is devotee. So then, you know, we can't get puffed up. But when you're dealing with others, then it's about everything is connected to Krishna. Then it has a position. It's perfect. So these are the two aspects that are there. Because like you see, even when it's presented here. Yeah.
So looking also from the non-devotee point of view, they're not very attractive by that kind of attitude.
Those things are just symptoms of conditioning. It's not because they're devotees. And they'd be proud of anything else, you know. Maybe it's you know, your football team, you know, it's superior, or, you know, anything. It's just, this is standard stuff. You know, it's just, you know, we're from this you know, continent, so we're superior. Or we're from this country, we're superior, or we're from this district, or this city, or we're from this social status, or we're, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on. So it's just the mentality that's there. So it's not good. Why is it not good? It hasn't come from devotional service. So say, oh, you're proud of devotional, so these devotees are bad. No, that's the conditioning part. That's the mixed part. That's not the pure devotional service part. So that's why one has to be able to separate what's devotional service and what's not. So what's not, you just don't bother with. And what is, that's what's of value. So you associate with what's of value, and what's not, you don't worry about it. So that's in dealing with others. In dealing with yourself, then there's always the point of, I'm only a practicing devotee. Means we use the term devotee because then you understand the context. Right? But you know, it's just like you say someone's an enthusiast. It doesn't mean that they can do the thing. They're just an enthusiastic about it. Right? So that's considered, you know, a step forward. It's something, you know, they're appreciated. Right? But it's a matter of practice, then it becomes real. Like that. But this other thing of becoming proud and looking down, that's just mundane. Because the point is parents are superior to the child, so do they look down at them? Huh? Yes, so that's the whole point. It's not a matter of the facts that one is in a superior position. The being proud, that's just stands on its own. That's just its own thing. It has nothing to do with devotional service. So it's not that, oh, devotional service has caused this. But that's the point. That's also mundane vision. Is that my problems? You know, I've got problems with the devotees, therefore there's a problem with devotional service. No, the problem you got with devotees is the material part that is still the mixed aspect. That's there, if you're attributing it to the devotee. If you do like Dharma does, then why would that happen? Why would you come in contact? Because there's something for you to gain there in the way of, you know, dealing with mentality. So if it's unfavorable, that's because there's some aspect of unfavorable mentality that Krishna is trying to correct. Does that make sense? So, in other words, bad behavior is never good. It's never authorized. But why it happens is because it's material conditioning. You know, you can't complain that the guy, you know, in the, I'd say, intensive care, you know, has a problem. Let's say he's coughing. You know, it's like you can't say that. You know, but he's you know, the doctors are taking care. He's taking medicine. Why is he coughing? He's, you know, he's getting better. It's a process. So we say, oh, but how can devotee have this? It says, yeah, if you have a platform of prema, you're definitely not going to have that. But if you're below that, then there's a possibility. That's.
Yes.
Okay. Imperative form is used to indicate impossibility. One does not compare a mustard seed to Mount Meru. The plural tense indicates that no one can disprove this fact, since this is the consensus of many persons. Bhagavat Sanghi Sanghasya is mentioned in the following verse, right? So you can't disprove it. One could say, you know, we don't believe it. Or you might have different perspectives, but you can't disprove it. That's the Vedic point, is if the Shastras have said it, you can't disprove it. Right? The modern is we haven't found that it's not true, so we can't prove it, but we can't disprove it. It's the opposite. You know, so it's just, is that what makes sense? You know, so it's about it. So here it's about, it can't be disproved because it's a fact. And we can say all we like, but that doesn't disprove it. Bhagavad Sanghi is mentioned. Na tasya bhaven maho bhadas chanya prasangat prasangatar yoshit sangad yata pumso yata tat sangi sangataha. The infatuation and bondage which accrue to a man from attachment to any other object is not as complete as that resulting from attachment to a woman or to the fellowship of men who are fond of women. Right, so that's the whole point, is yes. Attachment has to be compared there. Because yes. When that's there, it's naturally, it just expands. Because that's the whole point, is that the feminine nature means its ability to relate to all the things of this world. In other words, what we value of this world, the women take, that's just normal. Mm-hmm. Right? For men, it's something to obtain. For the women, it's just normal. It's just a matter of you don't have it. You understand? The man is, I'm here, I have to get it. The woman is, I'm here, where is it? You understand? Because woman is opulence, so that means that's facility. Right? And the man is in the position of situations. That generates facilities. You understand? It's just the two different natures. So, when the man attaches himself there, then he involves himself in operating that situation to get results. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. So, result, and Lord Chaitanya says, attachment to woman is a difficulty, but attachment to fellowship with men who are fond of it, that's worse. Because you're attached, that's just your own. But when you see others, how they're attached, then you get inspired. Right? So then that's... And the best... And the, you know what the fun part about it is? This is really good. This is really good. This exact thing. That or fellowship of men who are fond of women. And one of the main things why women give up the association of this man is because he applies the advice of that comes from that fellowship of men attached to women. So as you get deeper, it gets worse.
That's why it never works out.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
Okay. The verse says that more than association with women, associate with those who associate with women. Tat sangi sangataha is condemned. Thus, the intention of the verse is to show that association of the devotees of the Lord is more praiseworthy than association of the Lord. Right? So, as you go, to be materialistically inclined is bad. Then to get involved with the women, then that will expand the whole thing. Then to associate with those who are attached to women, it gets worse. Right? So you see, it goes that way. But here, but it's the opposite. You're connected with the Lord, that's better. But you're connected with the devotees that are attached to the Lord, that's the best. So it's the exact opposite. So that's what's being applied, is that we should be attached to the devotees who are attached to the Lord. That's the best attachment. That attachment will completely make life perfect. Yes. Does that make sense? So that's why are these given? Is so that we focus on this side. Otherwise, we'll say, you know, what's the big deal? You know, what's the problem? Hey, we're grihasthas. You know, leave us alone. You know, like that. But then the problem is that's going away from Krishna, if that's the identity. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of, you know, we're devotees, we're absorbed in Krishna, then that's where there's no problem. A doubt regarding the transcendence of Bhagavat Sangha is dealt with by Srila Jiva Goswami in Anucheda 134 of Bhagavat Sandarbha. The doubt is, if Bhagavat Sangha is transcendental, it must be nirguna. Yet the Lord seems to prefer to associate with the gunas embodied by the demigods. At the same time, he seems to disdain the gunas embodied by the asuras. Srila Jiva Goswami launches into this discussion by citing Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.13. Okay. A value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot even be compared to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter. And what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which are for those who are meant for death. Right? So this is 1813. Right? So this is the solution to 1812. Right? In other words, if everybody got association of the those interested in pure devotional service, there would be no problem.
Instead of the whole war thing, just read the next verse.
Yes, that's the whole point. To be freed from the influence of the three modes of material nature is best. So, therefore, association with a devotee who is free from the influence of the modes is the best kind of association for a devotee. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1.1, King Parikit asked the following question. My dear Brahmana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, being everyone's well-wisher, is equal and extremely dear to everyone. How then did he become partial, like a common man, for the sake of Indra, and thus kill Indra's enemies? How can a person equal to everyone be partial to some and inimical towards others? So we see Krishna does this, you know, and he's supporting. But if we remember the Manvantara Avatara, his specific function is simply to protect Indra's interest. Yes. That's all he has. Right? So Krishna occasionally will do, but he'll also have some fun also with Indra. You know, just to, you know how you say, push his buttons a bit and like that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not give his real mercy to the demigods and others still under the spell of the three modes of material nature. He gives his real mercy only to the great souls, such as Prahlad, who are free from the spell of the modes. By associating with such devotees, one also becomes free from the spell of the three modes of nature. When one has thus shaken off the influence of the modes, he can engage in real devotional service. This is described by the Personality of Godhead himself in these words spoken to Uddhava, Srimad Bhagavatam 11.25.33. Therefore, having achieved this human form of life, which allows one to develop full knowledge, those who are intelligent should free themselves from all contamination of the modes of nature and engage exclusively in loving service to me. So that's the point why we say, you know, unintelligent and careless. Because they're unintelligent means they don't engage themselves, you know, in devotional service. And they are careless that they allow themselves to associate with the modes of nature.
Yes.
So because of that, they get entangled. That's the meaning, right? But does that make sense? So we can understand, what does it mean when the Shastra says less intelligent? It means has a tendency to not necessarily see things in connection with the Lord and free from the modes. Does that make sense? That's the meaning. So wherever one is worried about its application, this is what is meant. Right? So,
yes.
Yes. No?
Well, I wanted to ask you something about association with the body, but
it comes as we go. Okay. The assertion of the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Nirguna should be understood in the secondary sense of free from the influence of the three modes of material nature, and not in the primary sense of not having any qualities, right? Because you have to see the context, right? In other words, if the primary fits the context, you use that, you don't use the secondary. But if the primary doesn't, then you use the secondary. And primary here means how people are generally using it, what's the common usage. Right? Does that make sense? Like if we say cool, right, then what are we talking about?
The weather,
right? Yeah. So you have to know how it's used. You know, but if we're talking about, okay, we're gonna do this for the festival and the guy says cool, so what does that mean? There's a lot of ice statues, or they're going to put a big block of dry ice in the drink, and so it'll come across the floor. You know what I'm saying? No, it just means nice. So you have to know what is the primary and what's the secondary meaning depending on the context. Does that make sense? Because chala in argument means you use the wrong one. Right? And chala in joking, you do it on purpose just to create some fun. Right? Like that. Yeah. Okay. The personal and impersonal features of God are both nirguna. But it is the personal feature of God that is nirguna in the sense of being free from the three modes of material nature. Indeed, the impersonal idea of God is a product of the material modes of goodness, and the personal idea of God is free from the spell of the modes of the Supreme Personality of God. Is free from the spell of the modes, as the Personality of Godhead himself explains in the following words of Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-29. Happiness derived from the self is in the mode of goodness. Happiness based on sense gratification is in the mode of passion. And happiness based on delusion and degradation. Is in the mode of ignorance. But that happiness found within me is transcendental. Right? So happiness divided in the self is actually in the mode of goodness, because to only know the self and not know the Lord, that's still within the material world. So you're still under the modes, but the mode of the top, mode of goodness. That's the whole thing. So the concept of Brahman, though Krishna is Brahman, that concept of Brahman as nirguna and separate from the Lord, that's actually a product of the mode of goodness. It's not an actual transcendental concept. So that's the point, is the transcendentalists are endeavoring for transcendence, but in actuality they are under the modes of nature. That's the fun part, right? It means there's always that trick.
Sometimes we distinguish between spiritual and transcendental, so is it spiritual?
When we do spiritual and transcendental, when we use them both in the same context, spiritual means that it's not material, means the soul is that Brahman platform. It's the existence is based on the spiritual platform as opposed to on the material. Transcendental then means what's beyond. Like spiritual just means the situation. Transcendental means beyond. So that means the spiritual world, the Lord, the personality of Godhead, the devotees, devotional service. That's transcendental. But it also is spiritual because it's situated within that spiritual state.
Yes. Right.
Does that make sense? So one is just recognizing the freedom. The other is recognize what you do within that freedom.
Yes.
Right? Because they're saying, we want to be free. But what are you going to do once you're free?
Yes.
Then what do you do? Right? Exactly. It's like, what do you do with all the guillotines after the revolution? It's just like, there's nothing to do. Yeah, okay.
Jeez.
Sell them to the Italians. Cut round, nice round pieces of cheese. Okay. In Srimad Bhagavat Tatparya 3, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur expounds upon the meaning of nirguna in reference to the personal form of the Lord. The Supreme Lord is not a product of material goodness or passion. He is fully transcendental to the modes of nature. Therefore, the Shastra has addressed him as nirguna. Nirguna does not merely mean that he is beyond the three modes of material nature, for it indicates that he possesses unlimited spiritual qualities. The Supreme Lord is in Hoksija, which means that his activities are not under the control of the material time factor. The nature of Adhokshya is beyond the reach of direct perception, indirect perception, and immediate perception. In Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 112-113, Jiva Goswami makes clear that the phrase, that transcendental happiness found within me, means from Bhagavatam 11:25-29, a verse he cited above in his explanation of the term nirguna. Jiva Goswami drives a complete definition of transcendental happiness from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.13 and other verses in the first canto, Anucheda 12. The devotees, the dear to the Lord, are described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.13. The value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord cannot be compared to the attainment of heavenly planets or liberation from matter. And what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which are for those who are meant for death. Right? So the value of a moment's association with the devotee of the Lord, so that's why then Vishwanath made the point. Right, because this is Jiva Goswami. Now, Vishwanath is making the point that this means, you know, starting from sadhaka. Because someone could say, yeah, well, the devotee of the Lord means this. He's pointed out sadhaka, then bhava, then prema. So that nothing's left out. So that's the important element, is that everybody has been connected. So,
can we say that all those verses explaining the power of association, they also explain why the sages wanted to hear about Maharaj preaching? Because he was a devotee.
Yes. Because, well, not only is he a devotee, so then anything about him, his lifestyle and everything is perfect. So they see his absorption in the Lord. We see how he performs his duties in connection with the Lord. But we also see, important here, is how at the time of death, what were the duties and what did he do and how did he attain perfection? So then that aspect is brought up. Yes.
An anxiety of losing association of devotees and an anxiety of losing, you know, like regular, you know, wife, children, or whatever, family members. It appears exactly the same. It's like you're going through the same emotional things. So what's the difference?
One is you get eternal benefit, and the other you don't. I mean, you could say on the material side you do get eternal benefit, that it keeps you here eternally. If that was looking for. But the point is from that, so in other words, one's going to appreciate, because of appreciation of something that is being lost, there's that feeling. But the point is you're only appreciating part of what's there. You know, and even that, not the most important part. You know what I'm saying? It's a matter of the that they're devotees. That's the important element. They may happen to be in the position of family and friends, right? But the important element is the devotional aspect. So that's what has to be focused on. Then one interacts according to etiquette and duties, according to what is the conditioned situation. Is that? So it goes together. The point is you're always having to use whatever's the situation in the Lord's service. So you know, we don't have a problem there. So why wouldn't that be the same with family? Yes. It means family is a situation, so that's engaged in the Lord's service. So if one happens to be with family, then that's what you do. If one's without family, then one doesn't have to worry about that. You have other things to engage, like make sure no one steals your bucket, you know. Like that. That's the difference. That's how you know the difference. Are they in the bucket going somewhere, or are they putting halava in it and going somewhere? This is the difference. That's how you know which direction they're heading. Yes.
There are nine processes of devotional service, and it's always emphasized that hearing and chanting are the most important. In terms of associating with devotees, are there different levels of, for example, physical association, rendering personal service, or is hearing from the devotee more important? Which ones are their level of importance?
Yes. Means hearing and chanting means they can all take you back to Godhead. Why hearing and chanting is emphasized? Because from hearing and chanting you'll learn about all the others, and then you'll remember the Lord and be engaged in your activities. So in interacting with the devotees, serving devotees, that's padasevana. How do we know padasevana is of value? By hearing it. We hear from the devotee, then we understand the importance of serving devotees.
So
that's why hearing is always considered the first.
Physical association is not as important.
It's not as important on its own, but having heard about its importance, then being engaged in it, then it has more importance.
Or looking for the opportunity to render personal service.
Yes. But it's not that's the point. It's the association that's important. Because why is a devotee important to render service? Because then that benefit of that connection to Krishna.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's just like Prabhupada is walking down, you know, Second Avenue. How many appreciate his association? Most are dealing nicely. The bums, they'll move out of the way and they'll tip their hat and they'll do all these kind of things, right? But they don't really understand. Why? Because they haven't heard. So by according to their etiquette, they're dealing. But now, once they hear, now that association takes on a whole different thing. Does that make sense? So that's why it's not just about the physical proximity. Having that physical proximity after having heard, that's when you get the benefit. That's why hearing and chanting is the most important. But otherwise, all the things, just like Ambarish and Atmanivedanam, everything's just connected to the Lord. That's what we're trying to get to. But you get to there by hearing and chanting and remembering.
So, can we consider hearing and chanting, for example, getting Shiksha by studying the Acharyas? Is that also hearing and chanting?
Yes. That's always means that's because naturally they're going to refer to each other, so one's going to come across. If you're dealing with Prabhupada, then you hear from the other Acharyas. Right. The same thing, it's where you hear from first, then the other things come up. In this way, it is seen that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the object of love, Vishaya, and he is also the primary cause, Alambana, that makes the devotees fall in love with him. Right? So he's the object of love, but he's the cause of why they love him. Right? That's the whole thing. That's why he's complete in himself. By following the path that begins from hearing about the Lord, the devotees attain love, priti, for him. The word Vishaya may mean either the person who loves or the person who is loved. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 116.56. Please describe all these incidents if they relate to the topics of Lord Krishna. The devotees of the Lord are accustomed to licking up the honey available from the lotus feet of the Lord. By associating with the Supreme Lord, one falls in love with him. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the primary cause, Alambana, of ecstatic love for him. The secondary causes, Udipana, of ecstatic love are different. The Lord's dear devotees, who are of two kinds, namely the devotees who have the same desire, Savasana, and the devotees who have different desires, Binavasana, are also objects, Vishaya, of ecstatic love. The devotees are also the reservoirs of love, Adhara, for the Lord. Right, so they're holding that love for the Lord. The Lord is the object of it, but also the devotees are the object of that love. However, one's material friends and kinsmen are not the causes of attaining love for Lord Krishna. So that's the Vina Vasana. That doesn't attain love for Krishna. Right. Indeed, the devotees do not pray to attain love for their friends and kinsmen. Rather, they pray only to love the Supreme Lord. That they do not pray to attain love for the friends and kinsmen is seen in these words of Queen Kunti in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.41. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please therefore sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. Because if she's seeing them from that level, the point is, why associate with a family? Because they're the wife and children, or because they are devotees? You understand? That's the point. So that you're associating just because they're family, then that has the mundane side. Because they're devotees, then that becomes useful.
So it's not that they're useless, it's just that the value of them is that they're devotees?
No, nothing's useless. It's useless when it's not connected to the Lord. That's the whole point. So everything connected to the Lord, it becomes very nice. Not connected to the Lord, it becomes not so nice. Right? Yes. It's just we have the gopis in Vrindavan, right? And they associate with each other. Are they elevated by that association?
Yes.
Why? Because they think of them as devotees of the Lord. Okay, now these gopis, they all have husbands.
Yes.
So are these husbands elevated by their association with their wives?
Yes.
No, not necessarily, because they see them as their wives, not as devotees. So that's the whole point. Yes.
But then we see the example of wives of the brahmanas. They didn't appreciate their wives in the beginning, but then later they realized, and then they took this association, and they became elevated, actually.
Yes, but that's the whole point, is that if you see in connection to Krishna, you become elevated, because then you see the enthusiasm that the devotee has.
So if it doesn't exist in the beginning, it's not a problem as long as you follow the process.
That's sadhana. Sadhana means, in the beginning, there's a good chance it doesn't exist. and then with practice, then it does. That's the whole point. You know, by that practice, you get to bhava, and then by that practice, you get to prema. Notice it's interesting, because this is straight out of the Anuchedas of the Sandarbha, how he's dealing with these technical, kind of analytical points. But at the same time, as you see in that, the examples are coming out on these high levels of devotional service. That's what I'm meaning about. It's balanced. Like that. Yes.
So we hear that devotees, they liberate their whole family.
Yes.
What if the family don't see them as devotees? That doesn't matter, or this is a different thing going on?
The point is liberated, as we see, is liberated is on the material platform is good, because you're raised in goodness. But on the spiritual platform, it's like, yeah, so? You know, it's like you burst in the front door of the house, and right, and everybody's sitting around on the couch and chairs and that, and you know, somebody's in the kitchen, and you know, somebody's, you know, walking to the bathroom, and you go, "I'm in the house! I'm in the house!" And it's kind of like everyone's at, yeah, so? So that's our view of liberation. It's like, who cares, right? You know, the guys, you know, who are going to the bathroom and looks around the corner. Oh. You know? So, that's kind of, yeah. Okay. Anucheda 113. The love the devotees pray to attain is described in these words of Queen Kunti in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.42. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. The sages continued. The personality of Godhead is Prayanasya, the exclusive shelter for all great living beings. His transcendental attributes cannot be measured by such masters of mystic powers as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Can anyone who is expert in relishing nectar, rasavit, ever be fully satisfied by hearing topics about him? Text 14. Srila Prabhupada remarks in his purport to verse 14. Now, Bhagavat Saptahas are held for 7 days only, and after finishing the show, both the audience and the speaker become engaged in material activities as usual. They can do so because the speaker is not Bhagavat Pandhana, and the audience is not Shushrushatam, as explained above. Right? So he's not absorbed in the Lord, that the Lord is his life, and they're not actually interested in hearing about the Lord. Right? The sages completed their reply to Suta Goswami by saying, "You, Suta, are a learned and pure devotee of the Lord. As such, you are Bhagavat Pradhana. The personality of Godhead is your chief object of worship. And so we beg to hear from you the pastimes of the Lord, for they are Vishuddham, above the material modes." Right? So therefore, they are Shushushatam. "We are anxious to receive such messages by Maharaj Parikit, whose intelligence was fixed on liberation, attained the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of Garuda, the king of birds. Those topics were vibrated by the son of Vyas to Maharaj Pariksit, and because they were about Ananta, the unlimited, they are purifying and supreme. They are Bhagavat Abhirama, most dear to the pure devotees, being Ati Bhuta, Yoga Nishtam, wonderfully full of Bhakti Yoga, 14 to 17. And it always uses the vibrate, because vibrate is the activity. That's what you're doing. You're vibrating and creating that sound.
Yes.
That's
yes.
the,
yes.
you know, the. In his commentary to verse 17, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how Maharaj Pariksit's intelligence is fixed on liberation. Sutta asks, by jnana one attains liberation. Why do you not desire liberation as a result of your knowledge? The sages reply, for us devotees, jnana actually means tasting the activities of the Lord. Its result, liberation, means attaining the feet of the Lord. Pariksit is the example. Please talk about the Lord's activities by which Pariksit attained the lotus feet of the Lord, who has a flag with Garuda. But in the 12th canto, it is said that Pariksit attains liberation. That is true. He attained apavarga. Apavarga means the lotus feet of the Lord for the devotees. Right, so pavarga means that papa baba ma, you know, means always foaming at the mouth and
yes.
parishram, heavy endeavor, papa ba. Can't remember ba.
That's just attachment, bondage.
Hmm? Bondage and pa.
Maya, fear.
Fear and ma.
Mritya,
death. Right? So apavarga means that place where these things don't happen. So that means attaining the lotus feet of the Lord, not just floating around in, you know, the. How you say? The sunlight there. This is explained in fifth canto. Yata varana vidhanam apavargascha bhavati yo sau bhagavati bhakti yoga. Liberation by methods according to varna is bhakti to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 5:19-20. Right, so if you want to get liberated through the methods of engaging varna, which technically is the only way to do it, but it has to be done as devotion to the Lord. That's going to be real liberation. Otherwise, if you only engage in varnashram with naishkarmya, you'll get liberated, but you'll come back. But if you do that in connection with the Lord, you won't come back. So that's the actual apavarga. Just as apavarga is defined as the lotus feet of the Lord, jnana is defined as pastimes of the Lord, as described by Sukadeva. Right? So jnana means what is the pastimes of the Lord. So then when we see the chit potency as knowledge, or jnana, it means activity. Right? The Sankarshan jnana and bala means what are the activities, what are the, you know, what is the possibilities. Right? So that's thus, it is not untrue that Pariksit attained apavarga by jnana. Right? So by hearing about the pastimes of the Lord, he attained liberation. Right? He attained to the transcendental realm. This answers the question previously asked, how did his death take place and what did he achieve after his death? Srimad Bhagavatam 1:12:2. So it's important to know the definitions of the words. It means you're just conventional, but you have what is the actual full meaning? How the Acharyas look at it. That's going to be important. Then we see that all these terms are. So jnana yogi means one who is absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord.
Yes.
The karma yogi is one who is absorbed in rendering devotional service to the Lord.
Yes.
Right? The jnana yogi is one who is absorbed in remembering the Lord. So a buddhi yogi is one who does all three of these. Yeah, so not bad.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki Jaya Sarva Bhakta Vrinda ki Jaya Gaura Premanandi.